Life can be a complicated business at times. Life is full of decisions. Estimates vary from somewhere between 5,000 or 30,000 decisions we make every day. Some of them are fairly insignificant. Shall I have a cup of coffee? Maybe later. Some are slightly more significant. Shall I go to church tonight? Yes. Some are, of course, of the utmost significance. Liverpool? Everton? Everton? Liverpool? There are these decisions... There are these decisions we have to make. And some of them are these kind of big decisions. Anybody who's been a parent will know. You know, the decision, what school should I send my child to? There are other decisions like, you know, what shall I do for holiday this year? But how can we make the right decisions? The number of horror stories you come across about people who've made decisions about where to go on holiday. They've looked at the brochures, maybe even looked up on TripAdvisor. They decide on what looks best, only to find that it's a disaster, a horror story. It's even worse when you've made a decision to change job or move house, only to find that really it's kind of out of the frying pan into a very warm fire. Because, as we will find out from our passage this evening, first impressions can sometimes be wrong. Last Sunday we started a series following the life of Abraham, going through Genesis 12 to 22. It starts with Abram, as he was called then. He was a pagan, living in one of the greatest cities in the ancient world, Ur. And in some way, God revealed himself to Abram there and told him to leave Ur and go to the place that God would show him. Abram did leave, but it was some time before he finally reached the new home God had for him. Along the way, there were some hiccups, and not least that Abram seems to have stayed in Haran halfway along the journey for several years, which was not the destination God had planned for him. But God was gracious and patient, and as we heard last week in Genesis 12:8, Abram pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. He'd arrived. Pretty soon after that, there was a famine, and Abram left there and headed down into Egypt. It seems that faced with that problem, rather than trusting God to provide for him where he was, Abram took the situation into his own hands, and the outcome wasn't glorious. And it wasn't long before Abram had to return. And that brings us to Genesis chapter 13 and to our Bible reading this evening, which I think Anne's going to bring for us.
The reading's on page 14 of your pew Bibles. Abram and Lot separate. So Abram went up from Egypt to the Negev with his wife and everything he had, and Lot went with him. Abram had become very wealthy in livestock and in silver and gold. From the Negev, he went from place to place until he came to Bethel, to the place between Bethel and Ai, where his tent had been earlier and where he had first built an altar. There Abram called on the name of the Lord. Now Lot, who was moving about with Abram, also had flocks and herds and tents. But the land could not support them while they stayed together, for their possessions were so great that they were not able to stay together. And quarreling arose between Abram's herdsmen and Lot's. The Canaanites and Perizzites were also living in the land at that time. So Abram said to Lot, "Let's not have any quarreling between you and me, or between your herdsmen and mine, for we are close relatives. Is not the whole land before you? Let's part company. If you go to the left, I'll go to the right. If you go to the right, I'll go to the left." Lot looked around and saw that the whole plain of the Jordan towards Zoar was well watered, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose for himself the whole plain of the Jordan and set out towards the east. The two men parted company. Abram lived in the land of Canaan, while Lot lived among the cities of the plain and pitched his tent near Sodom. Now the people of Sodom were wicked and were sinning greatly against the Lord. The Lord said to Abram after Lot had parted from him, "Look around from where you are, to the north and south, to the east and west. All the land that you see I will give to you and your offspring forever. I will make your offspring like the dust of the earth, so that if anyone could count the dust, then your offspring could be counted. Go, walk through the length and breadth of the land, for I am giving it to you." So Abram went to live near the great trees of Mamre at Hebron, where he pitched his tents. There he built an altar to the Lord. This is the word of the Lord.
So back from Egypt to the Negev, then from place to place, until finally Abram's back at the place where he first pitched his tent. There Abram called on the name of the Lord. Abram had wandered off, but God had not abandoned him. And I do think that's one of the great encouragements from the life of Abram for any of us who are disciples trying to follow the Lord Jesus. Abram did not always get it right, but God did not give up on him. And after this little excursion, God brought him right back to the place that he needed to be. And when Abram came back, he came back rich. Abram had become very wealthy in livestock and in silver and gold. But despite that, there was a problem on the horizon. When God first called Abram, he told him to leave his country, his people, and his father's household. But Abram only half obeyed. He left his home, but he took his father with him, which might well have been why he ended up stalled in Haran for some time. He also took his nephew, Lot. And as Abram got wealthier, so did Lot. By the time they got back to Bethel, that was becoming an issue. So we heard in verse 5, "Now Lot, who was moving about with Abram, also had flocks and herds and tents. But the land could not support them while they stayed together, for their possessions were so great they were not able to stay together. And quarreling arose between Abram's herdsmen and Lot's." There'd just been a famine. That's why Abram had to go off to Egypt. So I guess it's hardly surprising there wasn't enough food around. And the solution was obvious. Abram was the older. He was the head of the family now. He would just tell Lot that it was time for Lot to go and make his own way in the world. So Abram said to Lot, "Let's not have any quarreling between you and me, or between your herdsmen and mine, for we're close relatives. Is not the whole land before you? Let's part company. If you go to the left, I'll go to the right. If you go to the right, I'll go to the left." That really is quite remarkable. Today we might think in terms of a parent doing what's best for their child, but in this time, it most definitely did not work like that. How could Abram make such a generous offer? Because we're not told directly. But it seems to me that over time, Abram's been learning to trust God with his future. So a bit before this, rather than trust God to provide for him in the land God had taken him to, Abram trusted his own judgment, and it almost led to disaster. This time, Abram is willing to trust his future to God. That's a big lesson to have learned. And it's one which Lot doesn't seem to have shared. You see, from everything we know about that culture, that society then, you would have expected Lot to have responded by saying to Abraham, "No, uncle, You must choose. I insist that you go to where the land is best, and I'll go to the other, in the other direction. But Lot doesn't do that. Lot looked around, saw that the whole plain of the Jordan towards Zoar was well watered, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt. So he chose that. And I guess that if Lot had decided that it was up to him to make the choice, if he'd decided to take Uncle Abraham up on his very kind offer, the choice he made on paper was a pretty wise course of action. If you're planning on a move, you're going to look carefully at where the prospects are best. That's sensible. But Lot was overlooking something, and it's there in verse 13. Now the people of Sodom were wicked and were sinning greatly against the Lord. Did Lot know that? We don't know. But it is actually the crucial thing here. Lot looked, and his first impressions of the area were favorable, but first impressions can definitely be wrong. The lands to the east might have looked best, but it was close to Sodom and Gomorrah, two cities which must already have been getting quite a reputation for their wickedness. And though he didn't realize it, Lot was actually heading into danger. And it seems that Lot didn't just go towards Sodom and Gomorrah. If you flip through into the next chapter, a tribal war breaks out, and four kings go to war against five kings, including the king of Sodom. It is the sort of passage which brings anyone on the Bible reading rota out in a cold sweat. But it's okay, because we're going to skip over Genesis 14. But the key thing is there that Lot gets caught up in it because, as we find in Genesis 14:12, they also carried off Abram's nephew Lot and his possessions since he was living in Sodom. So he started off going in that general direction and he'd ended up not just living near to Sodom, but actually living in the city. You actually get an idea of how wealthy Abram had become by this stage, because he sets out with the 318 trained men from his household. He defeats the crowd who'd taken Lot, rescues his nephew and all his possessions. But Lot hadn't learned his lesson. He seems to have gone straight back to live in Sodom again. So I think Abram and Lot do show us two different ways of making decisions. Lot's decision, was made, I guess you could say, it was sort of horizontal. It was based on what humanly made sense. It was based on doing the best for himself. I get the impression that having lived with Abram for so long, Lot still made his decisions with no reference to God whatsoever. The land over there is the best land. We will do better over there than if we went the other direction. We're going to go that way. And not only that, Lot paid no attention to the danger that would come from associating with a society notorious for their sin, which clearly was the case with Sodom and Gomorrah. Whether Lot thought that he could go there without being influenced by them, or whether that was something he didn't even worry about, we don't know. But it was a big mistake. Abram's decision, on the other hand, wasn't purely horizontal. It included the vertical. It was made on the basis of his trust in God. He was willing to let Lot choose because Abram had learned that God could take care of him and provide for him wherever he went. And the Lord actually reinforced that for Abram. So in verse 14, the Lord said to Abram after Lot had parted from him, "Look around from where you are, to the north and south, to the east and west. All the land that you see I will give to you and your offspring forever." So even that bit of land that Lot had chosen, that Abram had graciously given to him, was still going to be Abram's eventually. Lot might have chosen the best land, but it was still land which was God's purpose to give to Abram. And God's purpose was not going to be derailed by Lot's selfishness. So what can all this tell us about being disciples? After all, it was 4,000 years ago, in a world which was so very different to ours. And I think it hangs around four words. And the first word is always. Always look beyond the immediate positive benefits of a decision. And most importantly, always look for where God is in a decision. There was a Lot which might have looked good in Lot's decision, but moving so close to Sodom was a big mistake. If you put yourself in a position where you will face temptation, you are asking for trouble. No matter how many pluses there might be, that is a minus that outweighs all of them. Always look beyond the immediate to where God is involved. And second word, never. Never underestimate the impact of leaving God out of your thinking. Lot saw how green the valley was, how good it would be for his livestock. He was probably mentally counting the money he'd make by trading in those nearby cities. But the consequences of all that were so far from what he'd hoped for. Of course, God probably won't reveal himself to us in the same way that he did to Abram. But we have his word, which Abram, of course, didn't. Charles Swindle, in his book about Abram, says, "Our biggest problem isn't that we don't see and hear God. It's that we struggle with doing what he's commanded. Our eyes and ears work fine. Our hearts? Not really." Never underestimate the impact of leaving God out of your thinking. Third word, forget. Forget about only pleasing yourself. That might sound obvious, but really, I think that is one of those things we're not very good at. We might not be as self-centered as Lot, but our default position is still the impact a decision will have on me. But as Christians, our priority should be, how will the decision I make honor the Lord? So always, never, forget, and remember. Remember that God is still in control. You see, I guess that thinking about all this could just paralyze you with indecision. If making a decision is this fraught with pitfalls, perhaps I'd better spend the rest of my life without making any decisions at all. But as we saw last week, God is able to work even through our failures and mistakes. That verse from Philippians, being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on until the day of Christ Jesus. So Abram's experience and Lot's experience just remind us, always look beyond the immediate. Look for where God's involved. Never underestimate the impact of leaving God out of your thinking. Forget about pleasing yourself and look at how your decisions will honor the Lord. And remember that God is still in control, and he can turn even our mistakes into his glory.